This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, we got Suze News coming up here. I have a kind of a freaky story that I want to share, but I want to give you the very latest on the continuing resolution, the spending bill. The House passed this yesterday, and then the question has been really for the last 24 hours or so, what's going to happen in the Senate? Will, you know, I mentioned this with Brian Kilmeade. A lot of times what happens, it's a bit of a game. They count the numbers because this is about math. They have to get to the 60 votes. And if there are Democrats that are in states or districts that look less threatening, for example, they may say, okay, you have more of a Trumpy district or a Trumpy state. Maybe we're going to give you permission to vote for this. That's not what happens all the time, but there are, you know, there's gamesmanship that goes on with these votes sometimes. And people are essentially let off the hook because they don't want to vote yes or no. But in this particular case, the question is, will the Democrats actually cross over? Will any Democrats cross over? Here are some House members like Congresswoman Jayapal and AOC, the nutty kooky caucus over in the House.
They should refuse to allow this bill to pass in the Senate.
If they don't.
I think there's going to be huge backlash from across the country, and I think all of them will, you know, will have to deal with the consequences of that.
The Republicans have the White House, the Senate, and the House. If they want to do this, and if they want to screw over the American people, they can do this with their votes and their party. I do not believe that Democrats should participate.
Okay, so that's the advice from the kooky caucus in the House, and apparently that's what's happening, because Chuck Schumer says there aren't the votes.
Republicans chose a partisan path, drafting their continuing resolution without any input, from congressional Democrats. Because of that, Republicans do not have the votes in the Senate. Our caucus is unified on a clean April 11th CR that will keep the government open and give Congress time to negotiate bipartisan legislation that can pass. I hope our Republican colleagues will join us to avoid a shutdown on Friday.
So who's going to get blamed for this? There's going to be, now it's looking like there will be a shutdown. It would kick in early on Saturday morning. Keep in mind that when they say government shutdown, not everything shuts down. There are things. But, you know, I think in the past, maybe the arch has been affected, right? Because national parks are affected. I don't know how this is going to resolve, but we'll certainly keep you posted on that. I'm sure that Trump's going to have something to say about what Chuck Schumer said. Trump, by the way, called Chuck Schumer a Palestinian. He goes, he's a Palestinian. Used to be Jew, but he's a Palestinian now. I thought that was an interesting shot. Before I get to Suze News, this is kind of interesting. I found this in the LA Times a couple of days ago. This is from Chino Hills, which I'm not exactly sure what the specific geography is out there, but it doesn't really matter. It's a suburb. It says, an observant Chino Hills resident who saw something odd in their driveway recently ended up calling sheriff's deputies who discovered a hidden camera disguised as fake plants.
What?
Yeah. So what they're saying here is that burglars are using these devices to learn the schedules of their would-be victims without having to stake out the neighborhood. A lot of times you park the car, you say, hey, who's leaving and going at this time? But in this particular case, they're putting cameras. So this camera was equipped with two large portable batteries.
Dang.
According to the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, a resident on... this doesn't mean anything to us, but on Cannon Lane discovered the portable battery. Deputies found a second battery wrapped in bright green leaves with a wire feeding into the camera. They took the evidence. They're working to identify who installed the devices. But they say, and this is the reason I wanted to pass this along, I don't know if this is happening around
here. I can't imagine.
But they all get so sophisticated,
yes.
Right? They basically said this is part of a growing trend used by burglars, but didn't provide any more information. Of course, we've had this situation, remember going back to the fall with Joe Burrow and some of the NFL folks. Maybe that's part of what they were doing. You know, for those guys, it might have been easier. They're out of town because they're playing in Buffalo.
But you're right. I mean, yeah, you're right. That would have been easy to look up a sports schedule.
It says, yeah, isn't that crazy? It says it's unclear if the device was able to transmit data over a Wi-Fi signal or if the camera had an SD card that would, you know, require the owner to retrieve the equipment. You understand that point,
yeah,
right? Somebody would have to come and get the SD card and say, what's going on here?
That's how they can trace it, I assume, right?
Maybe.
If they weren't using the... But what do I know?
Look, they say here devices have appeared in multiple cities across California and other parts of the country. Some of the devices are nestled in bushes, buried in front yards, or placed in planters aimed at a home.
Okay, P.S., I don't think I've got anything worth stealing. I don't think my house is worth doing that to. But, you know, if you did... Wouldn't you have cameras out? In other words, you wonder if there's not footage of somebody planting that. Because if you've got you know, that much valuable stuff.
Yeah. There might be, and that would be interesting. They're being a little careful on releasing too much information because I do think that they want to, you know, try to catch the people. Have you ever been burglarized?
No,
Fred?
I don't believe so.
No.
Never been? When I was in Sue's neighborhood
in
the city,
South City.
Well, look, my home in Holly Hills was burglarized twice. Once when I lived in it, and once when my tenant lived in it. But when I came, I'll never forget this. I came home one night. I was doing my show on KMOX until 6 o'clock. My wife was, I think, out of town, but she arrived home about 15 minutes after me, but I walked in my front door and everything was gone. I mean, I had this table from Pottery Barn that you could open up and it had storage in it. So the first thing I noticed is that was opened. And usually it's closed. And everything in it was gone. My TV was gone.
They didn't
take the furniture, but everything else. I had hundreds and hundreds of DVDs upstairs, and they took every one of those. Now, the only good thing was this was beneficial.
Did you a favor there?
Well,
later.
Here's what was funny. Yeah. No, a couple things on that, but you're right. This was at the time, because this would have been 2008 or so. This was at the time when there was a lot of transition to Blu-ray, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of those movies that I had, they were free from movie companies, and they were sending new ones out all the time because of the Blu-ray. So we had a picture that had Becky's mom passed away many years ago, but Becky's mom came into town, and she was standing in front of this storage unit where I had all my DVDs. If I didn't have that picture, I would have never been reimbursed for them. Because I was able to go to State Farm and say, and I filled out a list, and we made up a lot of the titles just because we didn't know, but we did know how many there were because you could count them.
Dang.
And I got a fair amount in the insurance settlement. But it was devastating. I mean, you really thought. I remember being in the house that night, sitting on the couch, and Becky's like, hey, can you grab like a blanket? And we're like, well, I took that too because they probably covered the TV or something. And
so
the second time my tenant was there, and they actually caught the people who did it they were dumb enough to take some of the stuff from the house, and they found it on them up in North County.
Jeez.
But it was a terrible experience because we really had so much that was taken. And then, Sue, you won't like this, but our late dog Casey was never the same after that. I don't know if these guys abused the dog or not, but they left the back door open, so the cats were outside, and it was crazy.
I am so sorry.
Yeah, it was a bad, bad situation. A lot of people, and you know what I was going to say about my tenant, when they found those people, it was kids that slid in through the window because these crews, they have the 15 and 16-year-olds or 14 and 15-year-olds. They're small enough to get in there, and if they're caught, they don't care because they're juvies.
Is it a one-story house, or was it?
It was a story and a half.
It was easy to get
into. But you know what? My DVDs were upstairs, and the cops even said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, I have a theory on this. I think that they knew my schedule because they knew when I was on the air. There was something that got unplugged, and...
it was at 2:15, right after I took it. So I think that there was a little knowledge there as well.
Well, and you were working overnights.
I was doing afternoon drive. Oh. No, this is I was on from 2 to 6. So I got home at like 6 o'clock in the evening.
Jeez.
And I already knew Rainford at the time, Fred. And I called Rainford right away, and the cops showed up pretty quickly. Oh. Hey, I always say, what good is privilege if you can't use it?
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
All right, let us begin on this day in history. When 62 years ago, that's in 1963, Fred.
Okay.
Architect Edward Stone unveiled his plastic model of what would become Old Busch Stadium. And that was 62 years ago. He called it a 20th century version of a Roman Colosseum. And you know what? I think that's actually pretty accurate, right? If you think of Old Busch.
Yes, absolutely.
That's kind of Colosseum-like. It featured 96 catenary curve arches, which is what the arch is. It's a catenary curve. And it mimicked the Gateway Arch. So that happened when he just unveiled what he was going to do, the little plastic thing, 62 years ago today.
That is amazing. Did he plan for the fact that many fans in July and August would be in that upper deck and
they did not.
Basically couldn't breathe because it was so humid and just sweat your ass off, right? Fond memories of that stadium.
I went one time. My mom just sent it to me the other day, found it somewhere.
Do you remember?
4 years old. I have, you know how sometimes when you're really young, you have like that one
kind
image
of
your mind?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
I have that one image of my mind of recognizing the arches. But obviously, I've lived and breathed at Busch 3.
Here's what I'd say, though. Man, Fred, you could hear so many damn memories. I was at Willie McGee's game, and I was at the game when Jose Oquendo pitched. It was like a 16-inning game in the 80s. I would go to, when I was in Columbia, Missouri.
You were at the game where he played like 8 positions or whatever?
Yeah.
That's
we
crazy.
Left.
That's
we, cool. I think we
so
left
cool.
before the game was over. I went to we skipped school for the World Series parade. There's a picture in the front of my Parkway West yearbook. Great memories at Busch
Stadium.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I remember seeing the football Cardinals there once.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think
once.
I did, too.
That's
yeah.
so
yeah.
cool.
I think I saw, I know I saw Lou Brock's 3,000th hit.
Oh, that's cool.
In that stadium, did you really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Jeez,
see, Fred's kind of bearing the lead. All I got is like Willie McGee's first game, and then he comes in with that.
That is pretty good. And 56 years ago today, you might as well hit the music now because it's a long intro. 56 years ago at the 1969 Grammys, Simon and Garfunkel won Record of the Year for Mrs. Robinson. I've always liked this song.
I will say this, that have you seen The Graduate? I've probably seen The Graduate 20 times.
Oh,
I haven't seen it in a long time, but what a great movie. It was my favorite movie, I think, when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Plastics. One word. Sue. Plastics. That's what I'd say. You ever seen The Graduate, Ethan?
Never. No.
That's what this song was featured in.
I know the song.
Yeah. There you go. I like that. Good memory there.
And
by the way, have you seen... Wait, I was just going to look this up. Because I drive by here every night, and he just announced this tour, and he's going to be at Stiefel for 2 nights. And when I pass by, it actually says, "What? Hold on, I got to go to the Stiefel website. All these ticket sites,
who's at Stiefel?
Yeah, who's going to
Paul Simon is at Stiefel?
You remember?
But no. But here's what it says. So you pass by. This is what it says on the website. It says Paul Simon in concert. A quiet celebration. You're basically going to his funeral. I'm just telling you. If you heard him sing a couple of weeks ago.
It wasn't good.
No. I mean, it's like the way. Remember the ad that came out for it? It sounded like death.
Yeah.
And then it says, a quiet celebration. So wear black that night. And I love Paul Simon, and I've seen him multiple times. But I would wear black that night for sure.
Maybe performing at the Steeple will kind of match that kind of performance a little bit.
Look, I hope you're going to night one because he might not make it to night two.
Oh,
that's
goodness.
All I'm telling you.
You've taken an ugly turn.
I'm sorry.
But I do understand your point. Yeah. I mean, he did not sound good. And they have to come up with something to justify him going back out. He must need some money.
You know, it's funny. We get these pitches all the time. I get a lot of email pitches. Fred gets all of them, right? You didn't even respond to the one. Did I send that one to you the other day? We got a pitch for, if my mom's listening, if Judy Reardon's listening, she might be disappointed that I didn't take this one. We got a pitch from Alan Roffelganger, whatever his name is, Doppelganger. He pitches a lot of stuff for Pat Boone.
That's right.
Who's
no way.
Going to take a stab at how old he is?
He's got to be 90.
He is 90 years old.
Oh!
If he was 89, I think I would have taken the interview, Sue, but I decided against it.
But he might be okay.
He's Pat Boone. I mean, the demo is not 150.
All right, fine. But okay. You still remember.
No offense to those of you who are 150. We appreciate you.
And getting Social Security.
Oh, you beat me to
that's
it,
right.
Fred. Oh, you're killing me. All right, I suppose we should talk about the fact that Southwest Airlines is now charging for bags.
I don't like this at all.
I hate it.
I'm irate.
Like, for everyone?
Well, here's the deal. It starts on May 28th, and if you're a top-level customer, you could still get two bags free. Those on the lower end of the totem pole, you know, you could get one, but the rest of us get none. I mean, you got to fly all the time to get the two.
It's messed up.
But what is the point? Like, they're taking away the seating. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I was a fan of
they're
taking away the bags fly free. What the hell is the point now?
They're taking the uniqueness completely out of it and the good deals out of it. Okay, charging these bag fees could make Southwest over $1 billion a year. A billion with a B.
Wow.
But some experts say this could damage customer loyalty, and it may lose as much.
Here's what's going to happen.
So we'll see. Right. Okay. What is your prediction?
Well, no, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, of course.
And it already kind of does happen to a certain extent, but people are not going to want to check bags. So they're all going to drag on.
Yeah.
Bigger bags than they should.
Yes.
It's going to take a lot longer to get to your seats. They think it won't because they're going to do the assigned seating, but it will. And it's just more of a mess. And then they're going to be going up and down the aisle saying, can we gate check that? Because it doesn't fit.
Yeah, and now exactly Southwest will be like every other airline.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing that makes them unique anymore.
Nope.
No, people aren't going to be enticed to have to fly specifically with Southwest
anymore.
When, to be quite honest, there's other airlines that are just better quality, like as far as just comfort and
I think Delta
is 10 times better. So you get the TVs, you get the live TV, comfortable.
Maybe it's because...
No, that's because you took a long flight to Hawaii. We're talking about in the U.S., you don't get a TV.
I've done it. No, I've been every Delta flight, even from St. Louis to Minneapolis.
They do have the screens that are...
I mean,
Southwest has those too, I think. But look, my position has always been very consistent. Delta, American, they all suck. Okay, now Southwest has not sucked.
Ugh.
Now they're going to all suck.
They're all going to suck. And the problem with Delta is if you go anywhere near Atlanta, there's an hour and a half for you to just figure out how to get to your plane.
The crowd didn't like it at all.
All right, I suppose, well, I'll mention this. By the way, they are going to start the seating thing, the open seating in 2026, or the non-open seating. So that doesn't happen for another year.
Okay.
Denzel Washington and Jake Gyllenhaal are starring in Othello on Broadway right now. And they broke a record by grossing $2.8 million in 1 week. That's the highest gross week for a play. And they're really only in the second week previews. Average ticket price, $338 last week. But I guess you get to see him live, you get to see him on Broadway, you could be close, I don't know. Up to now, the record holder had been the play Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which grossed over $2.7 million in 2023.
Wow. I don't have a hankering for Shakespeare. I don't know.
I get it.
It's just me.
Imagine if they did something else.
I know.
They'd really make some... But they're sold out, so I guess I should
What do we know?
Gyllenhaal and who?
Denzel.
Denzel.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mentioned this recently. I've never seen a drama on Broadway. I've only seen
fun
musicals.
Fun stuff. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Fun stuff. Yeah. Some people don't like musicals.
No, I get it. I get it. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. The busiest day of the year for KFC, Mother's Day. Sorry, the bell's no good.
Someone's going to have to explain that one to me.
Because the mamas don't want to cook and they like fried chicken and they can't make that. That's
that
a pain in
is?
The butt to make. So what does mom really like? You know what? When my mother was not feeling well, she'd say, I'm not really hungry. I would say, what about KFC? And she'd say,
okay.
Maybe a leg.
That's funny.
I'm telling
I like that,
you.
Sue. You've kind of connected the dots here.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I get a hankering because I can smell it every time we leave the building because it's connected to our
freaking
below us facility here.
Yes.
But it's dangerous to go into that drive-thru because it's just not safe. It's not because of the people that work there or anything. It's just a weird thing that comes out of our building and then you scrape your car. Nobody really cares about that. We're going to take a break. Elliot Davis is coming up next.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Sue, I was having a little fun earlier today because I mentioned we have Elliot Davis coming up, retired Fox 2 investigative reporter. You know, he used to do the You Paid For It segment. And if you go on YouTube, you can still see before he retired from Fox 2, they did this countdown, the top 10. And I was sampling some of those. So this is, he was chasing down Darlene Green. Listen to this.
No. I just want to ask if you're going to get back.
No. And her press flag comes up and stops him.
No. The response we got back is that.
You're talking about my vehicle.
Ah, the good old days. Elliot Davis, but you're still doing independent journalism here in St. Louis. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I am hanging in there. I'm getting over a case of bronchitis, but I'm still surviving.
Yeah, you have, explain to folks who that might not know. I actually had a listener that came up to me a couple of weeks ago, big fan of the show, but had no idea that I came on to 97.1 FM Talk from KMOX. But some people might not even know what you're doing out there after you left Fox 2, so let's kind of lead with that.
Okay, well, I'm retired. But I did have a minor of a social media footprint that's grown. On Facebook, for example, we've moved from 172,000 followers to 180,000 followers. And I think over a month period, I think we had 7 million views. So it has been busy. I did a lot with the homeless. And so I've been providing the content. I now have a social media person helping me in this as we expand Instagram and YouTube and other stuff. So we have been staying busier than I was on TV.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. Those are impressive numbers for sure. Not everyone can do that, but that really speaks to your, you know, history here in St. Louis and your success as well. So you call my attention because somebody shared this yesterday, and I'm not on Facebook as much as I used to, and a lot of that's just because people who have decided to not be my friend, and it's toxic out there. I appreciate what you're doing, but you wrote something about Gabe Gore, the current prosecutor. A lot of us have been certainly under the impression after Kim Gardner left that things were going better in that office. I think they have been going better, but look, Elliot, you're highlighting a couple things that are a little problematic in the office, correct?
I am. And it's regrettable. I mean, I had all the confidence in the world in Gabe Gore. I was a big supporter. I was a big cheerleader for Gabe Gore. I mean, publicly, I'd do posts and all of this stuff about how great Gabe Gore was and how great an appointment that was by former Missouri Governor Mike Parson. And I was singing his praises. But as of late, roughly 2 months ago, that changed. That changed actually when with the case where the 62-year-old woman, Gladys Anthony, was mauled to death by three pit bulls from the neighboring yard, and Gore refused to file charges in the case against the owner. And that was a question mark. But more than that, he didn't even explain to the public why he wasn't filing charges.
Yeah, you know, and what? So, let me stop you on that one, because I saw that and there was some coverage in the Post about that, and it was confusing because I think the only excuse that was offered is they felt like they didn't have enough evidence. But that was a strange situation for sure.
Police had made an arrest. They had arrested the owner for involuntary manslaughter. And so obviously there was some evidence somewhere. Clearly the dogs got out of one yard, got into the other, killed the woman, and then, of course, attacked her 73-year-old husband when he tried to go to her defense. and no charges, nothing foul.
But the other one that you highlight, and we remember this because we talked about this, this was the young woman who is from England who is trying to, you know, escape gunfire in the Grove. There was a video of this that was caught on camera with these cars. I can't remember, was she here going to school or did she have someone that she was dating here? But that was a terrible case.
Yeah, that was Ellie Bentley. She was from United Kingdom. She, you know, had been involved with a soccer player. That didn't work,
right.
But she moved back to St. Louis because she really liked St. Louis. She was trying to escape random gunfire in the Grove neighborhood, but the guy, she was like in front of a car, but the guy ran, jumped in the car, floored it, raced off, dragging her body three blocks.
Yeah.
And so police arrested the 25-year-old driver, I think, for, and it's a sharp girl. She was 25 years old. I think she had degrees in physics and mathematics, she did survive. Police had arrested someone for leaving the scene of an accident. A year later, Gabe Gore drops the charges, and people are wondering, well, what the heck? What's going on? The thing, and then there are other cases too. The pattern is like these are things you criticize Kim Gardner for.
Yeah, it doesn't
these,
make
when,
sense.
When police would investigate cases, they'd make an arrest, good arrest. They get to the prosecutor's office. Kim Gardner would say, "Sorry, you got nothing." What we're seeing is a pattern of Gabe Gore dropping charges, reducing charges, and the like. And so it is really getting to be a questionable deal. For example, there were two murder cases recently that Gabe Gore dropped charges on. One for second-degree murder, one for first-degree murder that he dropped charges. And the latest deal, Mark, comes from a really amazing source, a person who used to be a prosecutor in the circuit attorney's office is complaining about how Gabe Gore handled the case of his brother who was killed. Gerald Christmas was a assistant circuit attorney in the office of D. Joyce Hayes. He handled cases like this.
Yeah.
And he was saying what happened in the case of his brother should not have happened. It would not have happened under D. Joyce Hayes administration. Essentially, his brother shot, killed. Charges were filed, among which second-degree murder against a suspect or armed criminal accident, a number of other charges. Gabe Gore, he says, told him that if something changed, that he would call him, right? Well, guess what? Gore never called him.
Yeah.
He only found out a victim services called a relative and said the charges had been dropped, major charges had been dropped to involuntary manslaughter, reduced from second-degree murder, involuntary manslaughter. The other charges had actually been dropped. And so a person who could have gotten 30 years to life was now only going to get 7 years, and it gets even worse. This person, the suspect, had already served prison time for gun charges, and he was out on bond on two new felony gun charges, right? He'd just been out on bond 2 days. Well, guess what Gabe Gore's office did? They combined the two cases and then offered him 7 years on the two cases. Gerald Christmas went to court and testified and went to court, talked to the judge to try to, and the sentencing, to try to get the that deal thrown out. He says the judge didn't do it, fearing that if she didn't go along with the deal from Gore's office, he would just drop the case altogether.
Elliot, I've got a question for you. Does he have any defense for this? I mean, has he defended himself? Is there any kind of, what the heck?
What he has said, I've asked for an interview. I'd have to ask him to talk. He can talk to any reporter as far as I'm concerned, because I'll still get the information. But the last thing they wrote me is said, well, it's still an active case, so we're still looking for something, but we have no comment. But right now they're doing nothing, essentially.
Wow.
And he's offering no good explanation. And this is interesting. I'm going to show you something that's interesting here. On his bio, he was appointed to his job May 30th, 2023, to take the case of Kim Gardner. My contention is that he's acting more and more like Kim Gardner and handling these cases that police work hard on. This is what police went through. I'm surprised having flashbacks. If they didn't get state control today, they'd probably be depressed.
Well, let me ask you, because we have limited time here, but I want to get your thoughts on that and your thoughts on Tashara as well, whether she's looking like she's on the way out. But obviously, they passed this bill. It's going to Governor Kehoe. Look, Elliot, I was in the camp 10 years ago, whenever that period was, that thought local control was a no-brainer. It didn't make any sense to me. Things have not turned out so well. So I kind of got in the camp that supported this this new police commission and not local control. Your thoughts on that, though?
I absolutely support state control of the police department because we have a city where the mayor was a progressive, the board of aldermen are progressives. When the whole defund police movement surfaced, it seemed like all of them were on the same page with wanting to, at least in some ways, defund the police. Police could get, even under the Gardner years, when police were getting hammered, police got no vocal support, really, from either Tashara Jones or from Kara Spencer. None of them really stood up for police. I'm not going to single out Kara by herself because it was the entire board of aldermen. Save maybe one or two.
Yeah,
I think the problems that police have no confidence, and it's not a racial thing. The Police Officers Association is supporting it, and the police and the Ethical Society of Police that represents the African American officers, they are also supporting state control. Mm. Here you have the organization representing black police officers saying they'd rather have Republicans in Jefferson City control the police department than the African-American mayor in St. Louis.
And when it comes to the African-American mayor in St. Louis, it does appear very likely that she's toast. Do you see a path for her to retain and win the second term?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think that it's like I wrote something about it. I really think it's the end of the road. You look at the margin. She's like, Kara got like 68% approval to Tashara, maybe 23 or something like that. Anyway, it's far behind. It's too much ground to make up. The voters, I think, have spoken, and the voters have said that Tashara Jones has had her chance, and that's it. She has only herself to blame for a lot of these issues. I've covered the homeless. It was a battle trying to get her to put a warm-up bus out on the street. That should have been a no-brainer, to give the homeless a place to come and get warm. Public safety. She made the decision, for example, they all decided they'd rather look like the defund the police folk rather than the support the police folk when that whole movement was out. Soured the relationship with the police. So she made some calls early on in her administration that's hurting her now. Whatever she does now, too little, too late.
Yep, I'm with you. Well, Elliot, thank you for jumping on here. And, you know, I'm certainly a big proponent of local journalism. I've expressed a lot of concern with where, you know, it's a resources game for a lot of organizations, and I get that. But good independent journalism is really thriving, and I think you're a great example of that. That's an incredible and impressive number of 180,000 followers on, Facebook. Elliot Davis TV, if you'd like to follow. So keep up the good work. We'd love to have you back, and thanks for joining us. And I hope the bronchitis is better.
Well, it's getting there. I would have come in person, but I said, I don't want to affect everybody else. So,
well, I appreciate it. We'll have you down, though. We'd love to see you in person sometime. That would be awesome. But thank you, Elliot.
Okay, buddy.
Take care. That's great. And I think it's awesome to have, you know, a venue that he has that much loyalty with the audience that he can still do stories like that. So I'm very impressed by that. We're coming back with more. All right, on the Tashara front, there's really, you know, it's interesting, Sue, because you, you're moving out of the city. Can we say that now? Are you officially out of the city?
Nope.
Okay, you still live in the city. You still have your house, but Sue is moving to the county for a variety of reasons. But look, the people like you, and if I still lived in the city, and I did live in your neighborhood for a while, we don't want Tashara because she's not pro-police, because she doesn't attend to the basic services.
Correct.
And because she's a nut job, right? But keep in mind, and this is what's funny, there's a piece in our local paper today that is written by someone named Austin Hewlett. I don't know who these reporters are anymore. You know, I'm old enough to remember when we knew some of the reporters at the Post-Dispatch, right? We knew some of the reporters in TV, like Elliot Davis, and now they're doing independent journalism. So this story is from a different perspective. This is about the progressives who are let down because Tashara crossed the line and may have allowed for the fact that, maybe we need some police patrolling the city.
Oh, they're mad that she actually...
Yes.
Oh, my
God. So it says, 4 years ago, Janice Mensah thought Tashara Jones could be the progressive mayor the city needed. Mensah remembers helping organize events and attending protests with the future mayor and feeling so hopeful, Sue. She was saying all the right things, Mensah said. But after Jones got into office, well, those things changed.
Do these people like crime, Mark?
Yeah.
I truly don't get it.
This is such a great point because here, listen to what this story says. She disappointed activists with support for police raises. What? This is what these people are about. Fights with jail watchdogs and breakups of homeless camps. Now, we can talk about that because that whole situation, this is what they highlight, Sue. And I guess, honestly, I've put it this way. I think I'm the only damn person that really does care about this, but it annoys the living crap out of me. When the vice president who ran for president, Kamala, came in October of 2023, remember right before that, we had these homeless camps that were just about two blocks from where we sit, in front of City Hall, in front of the dilapidated courts building, which is at 14th and Market, right across from Stiefel, and then in the park across the street, Pelker Park. So the vice president comes to town, and maybe even before she came to town, they cleaned the homeless camps out, right? And they put these barriers around City Hall and around the courts building and around Pelker Park, and they've been there for a year and a half.
Yep.
They have been there for a year and a half. That is so symbolic and representative of this crappy administration.
Yes.
Because they have achieved nothing. I mean, if you want to look at the legacy of Tashara Jones, there is none. Just destruction of the downtown area. And it's sad because there are so many good things, as we pointed out, with the soccer stadium, with the area certainly to the west of where we are right now, where exciting things and economically productive things are happening. But she is so worthless. It's unbelievable. There's nothing that I can point to that she's done as a positive in this particular situation. So in the story, they talk about how, you know, 4 years ago she was the favorite and more than 100 progressives signed a letter endorsing her. They even mentioned Louis Reed, who went to prison, of course, said at a debate if he couldn't be mayor, he would want Jones in room 200. And I'm sure that was sort of a racial thing. But they go on and on in this particular story, not about public services that haven't been, you know, really attend. They even go to the snowstorm, but they talk about it from a perspective of the progressives and how the progressives are not happy. Here's one. In early 2023, Jones, looking to stave off a state takeover of the police department, which, by the way, didn't work today, announced big raises for police officers. Activists were disappointed. They wanted money shifted elsewhere. These are people that believe that criminals need social workers, that no one should be punished. They don't really care about anything except for their kooky, wacky ideas.
Which is fine, but none of those work. And if we can't point to anything that she's done that's positive, what can they point to?
Well, they can't. And that's what's interesting.
And at what point does that sink into your brain and think this isn't working? It just boggles my mind.
You were gifted a situation with, what, $700 million from the Rams settlement and the ARPA money? And you've done what? Sent out $500 checks to poor people in St. Louis? Hey, where's the follow-up on that pilot program that was supposed to be so good, dragging people out of poverty in the city because we're sending them $500 checks? How much of that money was actually put to good use? You know, and then we're talking about reparations when every intersection in downtown St. Louis has burnout marks, and people don't feel safe coming down here. So it's outrageous what has happened in just a short time to this city. Now, Lyda Crewson sucked ass, too. She really did. She was abysmal. And her situation is even more embarrassing, maybe, because her own husband was murdered in the West End, and she did nothing about crime. And, of course, she ushered in the early parts of COVID and mask up and all that nonsense. I mean, it's been a disaster, you know, and I think people, I have much more of a deeper appreciation for the basics that Francis Slay would achieve when he was mayor of St. Louis, because we didn't have this nonsense. And by the way, we even talked about issues and with Mayor Slay's administration when Rainford was chief of staff, we talked about getting rid of the earnings tax. There was even a commitment to getting rid of the earnings tax from the Slay administration over a course, you know, this would never happen in 1 year, 2 years. It's over the course of 10 years. But we don't hear anything along those lines. And I'll be shocked. I'll be impressed if it happens. But I hope that this plan by Cordish for the Millennium Motel and you know that other area down, I don't know about the AT&T guy, but I don't hope that those projects fail. I hope they succeed because it would be good for the city. But for the love of God, under a different mayor.
Get more at 971talk.com.